Now, you're welcome back to part three of Religion Matters, KFM's weekly religion reflection and social issues programme. I hope you're well this morning and hope you're enjoying our chat with Justin Kilcullen, who has joined me in studio. And Justin has just recently retired from Throgra. Justin, have we got a handle on poverty, on global poverty? Because we all remember back in the 80s, we all grew up with an awareness of the Throgra box, and it was for the black babies in Africa. And then we had Live Aid and we had all of those campaigns. Have we got a handle on poverty?
Well, I think the Irish people, do have an understanding of this because of our tradition and background through the missionaries and the black babies, for those of us who remember that. And it's often knocked now as having been very patronising. But actually, I think it gave us an understanding that there was a poor world out there and we had a responsibility towards it. And as we grew older and grew to understand it better, I think our perhaps patronising attitude matured into a more enlightened one. So I don't knock it too much. You have to start somewhere. And I think Irish people are very generous. I mean, they support Throgra and the other development agencies very generously. And the Irish government have responded by having a very good development aid programme, and they know that the people want it. What's happening in the world is that the nature of poverty is changing. It's not just that it's in poor countries and then there's wealthier countries and then there's rich countries. They now talk about the new billion poor, who are the billion living in the middle income countries. So that's like India, Pakistan, Indonesia, Uruguay, other Latin American countries, Peru, and so on. So when you go to these countries, you see these places are doing very well. You know, there's
buzzing.
The big shops are there, and the quick food, fast food outlets, and all the rest of it. But when you look at the statistics in those countries, there are people living at the level of the poorest people in the world. And there's a billion people now estimated living in middle-income countries in absolute poverty. And they're hidden because of that. Because the statistics overall show average income so much. But in fact, what is happening is the growth of massive inequality. So you have small numbers of people with vast amounts of money, and you have significant numbers of people who are very, very poor. And that is happening in Ireland as well. I mean, it was just during the week there, last week I read that in the 51 countries that make up Europe, Ireland is the fifth most unequal. And given that we've come through the Celtic Tiger years and all the money we raised, you know, it's shocking, really,
that
we weren't able to balance out a bit in our... This is not to say that everyone has to be paid the same, but the gap between the top and the bottom should be narrower. Mm. And actually, if I may just go on a little bit,
sure.
What has been shown is that in countries where inequality is reduced, the whole country flourishes as a result. So everybody wins. We're in a win-win situation. We get this sorted out. And of course, if you maintain the gaps, what happens is people become disillusioned, they become disenfranchised, disengaged, and you end up with problems in the cities like London had there 2 summers ago, those dreadful riots and what have you. And that's how it emerges in the end. So I think we need to be more sophisticated in our analysis of poverty generally. And we do need to continue to work with the poorest countries, because even though countries like Africa now are showing very good growth rates in their economy, like 10% of nothing is nothing, and 10% of a very poor economy isn't an awful lot. So the path is moving in the right direction, but already, if you like, victory is being declared. Oh, Africa's on the way back, and so on and so forth. There is a long way to go. It'll be another generation before we will really see Africa taking its place where the Asian and Latin American countries have now arrived at. But we have to ensure that that development doesn't increase this massive inequality, and that the resources are shared somewhat justly and fairly amongst the people.
Now, you must have an incredible range of memories, and you also must have an incredible range of photographs or things that you might have picked up. I know for sure that you had a photograph that was in Time magazine and was one of the photographs of the year, I think. Tell me a little
That's
bit about
right.
that.
Well, in 1997, there was a terrible famine in North Korea. So people will be familiar with North Korea from the recent goings on with their new 26-year-old president. But at the time... It was a dreadful situation, and I managed to get a visa to go to North Korea. There's a bit of a story behind that too. When I was in Tanzania, I knew the North Koreans because I helped my housemate teach them English. So I leave it at that. But yeah. I was able to tell a story that got me a visa, and I went off with a colleague, Mary Sweeney. And I mean, some of the scenes we saw were quite shocking, but we did visit an orphanage, and in the course of the visit, we were brought to this room out the back, and the doors were opened. The room was in darkness, and these children sort of emerged out of the gloom, and they stood at the window looking out at us. And I just had my camera, and I just went click, 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 click. And when I came back, the Irish Times were on to me to wonder had I got any photos, and I left the roll of film in to the Irish Times office on a Sunday night, and on Monday morning there was one of the photographs on the front page. And because there was so little information from North Korea, this was the only kind of visual image that had emerged. And it was bought up by international photojournalist
press agencies and stuff. Yeah.
It was sold all over the world. Time magazine, Newsweek gave a double page spread. And at the end of the year, it featured as one of the photographs of the year. Not, I think, for its photographic brilliance, because I'm not a brilliant photographer, but it turned out to be a good photograph. But the story was really what it was about, that this hidden famine had been become... Here was one image showing of the appalling situation that happened. The Irish people donated £3 million, so that's about €4 million on a one Sunday collection in 1997 for Korea as a result of Trokra's visit there and of the work that we did. And it was a fantastic response, and for a country that really we knew nothing about. And that is amazing. I mean, one of the things I can't not say in an interview like this as I retire from Trokra is to pay tribute to the extraordinary generosity of all the people out there, the listeners in Kildare and in Carlow and all over the country, that you know, at times of crisis like this, Irish people have always responded. And next Sunday indeed there will be a church collection for Syria, and that is another appalling situation, and I know that people will respond generously there. When we look at the stuff on the television news, it's very political, it's very complicated, and, you know, at times people don't really know quite how they can help. But just to assure people that Trokra is there, we're part of the Caritas Network, which is the Catholic Church humanitarian network across the world. We have Caritas Syria, which is based in Damascus and is dealing with one group of people. We have the Caritases in the neighbouring countries, in Lebanon, in Turkey, who are dealing with those that are there as refugees. And we're able to plug into that network. And whatever assistance is given next weekend, I can assure listeners will go to help those people who are in a terrible situation. And even if the peace talks being mooted now in Geneva are successful, it's going to take years to get these people back into their homes. I mean, the country has been destroyed.
I have some figures here. 8.4 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. 100,000 people have lost their lives after 2 years of war.
Yeah.
Shocking.
I mean, it is absolutely shocking. And so we will be there, and by working with the Catholic networks there, it saves on our expenses, of course. They are well situated on the ground. They speak the language. It's a very effective way to help those people.
Yeah. Justin, insofar as anyone retires these days, will you be doing a different type of travel? Is there something that you have put off that you really want to do, or are you still just enjoying the not having to kind of get up every Monday to Friday morning?
Well, it's only 3 or 4 weeks now. I'm still getting used to the idea. What I think I am relieved of is that no longer carrying the responsibility of an organisation of Trokra's size and complexity. It's 400 staff in 20 countries around the world, some of the most dangerous places on the planet. You know, 65 million a year expenditure. So there's a lot of responsibility attached to it. So that's what I feel most when I wake up in the morning. I don't have to worry about that today.
Yeah.
I'm happy not to be travelling at the moment because I travelled a lot in the last year. Myself and my wife hope to take a holiday in Africa to visit the game parks. I haven't been to a game park since 1977, despite all my travel back from
the touristy thing.
Yeah,
so you're going to do the touristy
all the
thing.
I missed when I was working.
Yeah,
and I'm going to undertake a course in coaching and mentoring of managers in organisations at the Smurfit Business School in UCD, Because I feel I've been 20 years responsible for Troker. I've learned an awful lot in that time, and I'd like to be able to hand that on to other people. And this course, I hope, will give me the skills I would need, rather than just winging it, giving people advice, that in a kind of structured way, I'd be able to help people, particularly in the not-for-profit sector, who can benefit from my experience. I'd be delighted to help anyone who'd be looking for advice.
Is there a book in your 32 years with Troker? There is a book, I know, but will you write it?
Well, there's a man who wrote the history of Troker for us, Brian May, who sent me a text saying, whenever you want to have the biography done, give me a call. It might be better done by somebody else rather than myself. I tell you, I had a very interesting conversation with Cardinal Connell some years ago. Now, I know Cardinal Connell quite well because he's one of the trustees of Troker. He was when he was Archbishop of Dublin. And I asked him, was he going to write an autobiography? And he gave a very interesting answer. He said, I never read an autobiography where the author wasn't the hero. And he said, I will leave this to other people if anyone thinks it's worth writing about. So maybe if somebody thought that my life was interesting enough that they would interview me and talk to others and maybe write it up, that might be the way to do it, rather than me trying to remember these things and spinning the whole story to my own advantage.
Yeah, I presume you'll still very much be keeping an eye on the work of Troker.
Yes, of course. I was 32 years in Troker, so it's more than half my life. So it'll be very hard to get that out of my system, but I'm trying very hard to stay away. I think it's only fair to my successor and to the organisation as a whole that I remove myself from the scene. But I've told them I'm available at any point, and hopefully in a year or two, when everything has moved on, I'll be able to just be one of the team, one of the crowd. Whatever I could do, I could volunteer to do this or that or the other. But I'd be delighted always to be associated with Troker.
And your successor is Eamon Meehan. He was your deputy director for a number of years, wasn't he?
Yeah, Eamon is a terrific guy. Yeah. He's going to do a great job. He's from County Clare, a hurling fanatic. I'm from Dublin and I'm a soccer man, so there's a difference between the two of us there. But he has worked in Troker for, I think, over 20 years now. He did a lot of work in Africa. And I think the staff were delighted we had an inside appointment, and he's been able to move pretty seamlessly into the job, and
makes a difference.
Wish him all the best.
Yeah. Well, Justin, we wish you all the best in your active retirement, and hopefully many people will get to benefit from the fruits of your experience in Troker for 32 years. I think it's a very unique experience, and I think it would be important for it to be documented and shared and passed on in some way. And thanks so much for coming into us here on in KFM. And we just a reminder about that collection. That's next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, in all the Catholic churches around the country.
That's it. Yeah. Yes. Thank you very much, Brendan.
No problem. Thank you. That was Justin Kilcullen, and we're going to take some more music now.